2-meter temperature anomalies that are running 10 to 15 degrees C above normal. And you can see also that it's cold over the Asian continent, which is up over there, and we'll talk more about that in just a minute. Let's see. Okay. All right, so diving right in, a couple of years ago, Steve Avris and I came up with this hypothesis that we thought linked Arctic amplification, which we know is happening, to the possibility that it's causing more persistent weather patterns in the mid-latitudes, which leads to certain types of extreme weather events. So the chain of events goes like this. So we know Arctic amplification is happening. We know that causes the polar temperature gradient to weaken. And we know that that results in, through the thermal wind equation, that we get weaker westerly winds in the upper level flow. So we think that should also lead to the upper level flow becoming more meridional or more wavy. And possibly those very amplified patterns in the jet stream should happen more often. If they do, we know those larger waves, those large Rossby waves, progress eastward more slowly, which brings us to the more persistent weather patterns and possibly extremes becoming more likely. So you'll notice that two of those links in the chain there, I have broken lines, and that's because that's where the rubber meets the road right now. That's where the research is happening. Those are the least sure and most controversial links in the chain, and that's what I'm going to be talking mostly about. But first, I want to talk about one of the mechanisms that's been emerging that makes this link. And what we're learning is that in certain regions and in certain seasons, there are particular mechanisms that are emerging to explain some of this linkage between Arctic amplification, sea ice loss, and more persistent weather patterns. So this one I wanted to mention in particular is related to the loss of sea ice in the Barents-Kara Sea area. This is in the winter time. We're looking at the temperature trends during December, January, February. This figure comes from a new paper that was out by Cohen et al. In Nature Geosciences. And so what we noticed is that we've got this, obviously, Arctic amplification happening, larger temperature warming trends up in the Arctic, but also this cold temperature trend or negative trend happening over Eurasia. So this is how the mechanism goes. We're losing that sea ice. There's a lot of warming going on in the Barents-Kara Sea area. And this is creating a ridge in the jet stream. All that warming that's happening there, all that heat being released back to the atmosphere in the fall here, is causing an anomalous ridge to form in the jet stream. So this has the effect of, in the downwind of that ridge, creating an anomalous surface high pressure area, which brings cold air down from the north, from the Arctic, and that depresses the jet stream over central Eurasia and brings cold air down in that area. So when that happens, that has the effect of amplifying the wave in the jet stream. So as that happens, that wave energy, that extra wave energy, is transferred up into the stratosphere, and that causes the stratospheric vortex to be disrupted, which then later in the season, you can see the timeline along here, causes in February or so the jet stream to become even more disrupted, more wavy, leading to the tendency for negative Arctic oscillations. So this same mechanism was identified in 4 new papers that have come out in just the last couple of months. All of these studies were done independently. Some were done with observations. Some were done with models. Some were done with self-organizing maps. They were all different approaches. They all came to the same conclusion. So in my book, that points to this mechanism as being pretty robust. So now I want to move on to the new metrics and evidence that we've been working on that's looking at trying to figure out whether, in fact, the jet stream is becoming wavier or not and whether it can be connected back to Arctic amplification. So I'm going to talk about 4 simple new metrics that we've been working on. The first one's called the Meridional Circulation Index. The second looks at the frequency of high amplitude jet patterns. The third is called sinuosity. And the fourth uses self-organizing maps. Okay, so the first one, first of all, let's take another sort of step back and look at Arctic amplification. So there's a lot of different ways to measure or define Arctic amplification. And this one is using the near surface air temperatures and looking at the difference in those anomalies between the Arctic and mid-latitudes. And what we see then, looking back to the late 1940s, and we've got it broken down by season here, you can see that Arctic amplification really only becomes positive since the late sort of middle 1990s. So this presents a real challenge because that means we only have a pretty small number of years to work with in terms of looking for the response of the atmosphere to Arctic amplification. So that's one of our big challenges, and trying to tease these signals out of the very chaotic natural variability of the system. But we also know, and we hear still over and over again people saying that Arctic amplification is only happening at the surface, it's not a deep layer thing. Well, actually, if you look at the temperature changes throughout the troposphere over the Arctic, so this is showing from 40 north up to 80 north, going up to 250 millibars, so these are the temperature anomalies during the last 18 years or so, we see that the warming does occur mainly at the surface, it occurs mainly at the pole, but it does extend up through the atmosphere. But then if you look at the geopotential height changes, because that warming expands the air down near the surface, it bumps up those heights up through the troposphere, and so we actually get a maximum up much higher in the atmosphere. And then if we look at what's been happening to the zonal winds in response to those height changes, because we're weakening that poleward gradient, especially up at the upper levels, we're seeing zonal wind decreases everywhere. Those blue and purple colors are all negative anomalies. But this is the annual average. This is a zonal average as well. We know that there's large regional and seasonal variability to this effect as well. So that's what I want to talk about next. So I'm going to start just by looking at fall, but pretty much everything I'm going to tell you now we see in all the other seasons as well. So what you're looking at here are the anomalies in the 1,000 to 500 millibar thickness during the fall, during what we're calling the Arctic amplification era, so since 1995. Those red colors there show you where the positive anomalies are, where the thicknesses have increased the most, and that's giving us our indication of Arctic amplification. So if we look at the changes in the zonal winds at 500 millibars that go along with those thickness anomalies, what we see is those purple and blue colors follow very closely that edge of where the maximum thickness changes are. So we can look at that and say that, but then if you plot a scatter plot of each individual grid point and how the thickness gradient, poleward thickness gradient, is changing and together with the change in the zonal winds, what we get is a very strong relationship between those two. And if you can see those black asterisks there in the middle that have an even stronger relationship, those are the maximum winds at the 500 millibar level. So it's a proxy for the jet stream, if you will. So we see this very strong relationship between the poleward thickness gradient changes, where it gets weaker, we get weaker winds as well. So moving on to this new metric then, which we're calling the meridional circulation index, as I said, it's a very simple metric. All it is the ratio, basically, of the meridional wind to the total wind speed. And the idea here is that if you take a typical wind vector and break it into its meridional and zonal components, and we just saw that we're seeing the weakening of the westerly wind, so that U component is getting weaker as a result of Arctic amplification, then just through pure geometry, we're seeing the U get weaker, the V stays the same, and we're getting a shift in the wind vector just through the pure geometry of this. So we can take this ratio, we call the MCI, and actually measure what's going on in response to the weakening upper level winds. So here are those changes in the zonal winds again, and here we're plotting now this meridional circulation index, the actual, the absolute value of it. So where those colors are red, it means that wind vector is shifting to a more north-south orientation. And what you see once again is that where those winds are getting weaker, we're seeing a positive change in the meridional circulation index, or a more meridional flow. we can plot this in a scatter plot as well for each of those grid points. And what we find is that there is a very strong statistical correlation between the change in the index and the change in the winds. So where the winds are weaker, we're getting a more positive MCI index. So this is making a direct link. Actually, we're going to make an even more direct link between what's happening with the change in the poleward gradient now. So on the x-axis here is the change in the poleward thickness gradient versus this MCI. And again, it's a very significant correlation between these two, meaning that as we're weakening the poleward gradient, we're seeing a more meridional flow in the 500 millibars level. So you might be sitting there thinking, well, maybe the V's changing too, the V wind that was there in the first place. So we've plotted now the change in the meridional circulation index versus the change in the 500 millibar winds. And what you see is no correlation. And if you go further and look at the change in the poleward gradient versus the change in the V wind, again, there's no relationship. So this change in the MCI is mostly due to the weakening of the zonal winds, which is in response to the weakening of the poleward gradient. So the next metric I'm going to talk about is a change in the frequency of these very amplified patterns. When I say amplified, I mean just a very wavy north-south flow to the jet stream. And as we look back over specific extreme weather events, such as the extreme flooding that happened here in Spain back in September of 2012, those of you who live in Barcelona might remember that, what we had was a very wavy jet stream pattern, but there was no block. And we can look at a lot of other different examples, like the polar vortex that attacked the eastern United States last winter. And again, we saw a very wavy pattern. Sometimes there was a block in the west, sometimes there wasn't. But the point is that there were many extreme events that were not related to blocking patterns, but instead were just these very amplified jet stream patterns, which we know tend to be very slow moving. So we've come up with this, again, a very simple metric, just looking at how often these types of amplified patterns occur. So every day, we take a particular contour in the 500 millibar height field, one that lies within the strongest poleward gradient, so it's a good proxy for where the jet stream is. And every day, we just measure its northernmost and southernmost point. So when we get days where we have a case where it's very far north and very far south, so a large difference, and that difference exceeds 35 degrees of latitude, we call that one of these high amplitude patterns. So there has been some question about using a single contour for doing this kind of analysis. And I just want to touch on that very briefly. I'm going to talk more about it in our great breakout group tomorrow. But this is looking at the 30-member CESM large ensemble for the latitude of various height contours in the 500 millibar height field over time. So going back from the early 1920s all the way out to the end of this century. And the contour that we typically use for most seasons is this 5,600-meter contour. And what you see is that, at least according to these models, or these model runs from this model, there is very little shift in latitude in the contours that we're using. All right, so how are these HAPs changing over time, these high amplitude patterns? Well, we can look at this case for fall. This is for the whole northern hemisphere now, and that green line is showing you the frequency of these very amplified patterns and how that frequency is changing over time during the fall, going back to the late 1970s. And so the green line here is that frequency. The black dotted line is the mean zonal winds. And there's a very strong correlation between those two on the order of minus 0.7. Now, if we focus in on the North Atlantic, which is where we see the strongest Arctic amplification occurring, there's an even more statistically significant increase in the occurrence of these high amplitude patterns. We can do this all around the northern hemisphere and tabulate the percentage change in these very amplified patterns. And so what you see here is all these different regions around the Northern Hemisphere, Atlantic, North America, through Europe, Asia, and the Pacific, and then for all four seasons. The colors give you an indication of the size. These are percent changes. So this is a 47% increase during these last a decade and a half or so versus the earlier part of the record. The two asterisks and one asterisk are tell you how they compare to the standard deviation during the early part of the record. So what we see is that the fall and even the summer seem to be really the hot seasons for these increasing frequency of these high amplitude patterns. And also they tend to occur mostly in the Atlantic and North America sector. Okay, so shifting now quickly to sinuosity. This is work that's in prep now. This idea comes from the world of river research. And the idea is that you take one of these single contours in the 500 millibar height field and you calculate the area that it encloses. Then you relate that in a ratio to a latitude circle that has the same area. So you take the length, the area inside that contour and relate it to the area of the equivalent latitude circle, and that gives you the sinuosity. So if we look at that over time now, this is going back to the late 1940s, and here is the time series of the wintertime sinuosity, and it's always a positive number. It's always larger than one because the length of this line is always larger than the length of the latitude circle. And so what you see is a lot of interannual variability, but in the last couple of decades we've seen this significant uptick in the value of the sinuosity during winter. We also find a very strong correlation between sinuosity and the Arctic Oscillation during most years. So you can see that it's always negative, meaning that when the Arctic Oscillation is negative, we get a positive sinuosity or a larger waviness to the contour. And about three-quarters of these years have correlation coefficients over minus 0.6. So we look at the annual cycle of sinuosity, and this is for a variety of contour heights, ranging between about 528 decameters up to about 570 decameters. And so what we see is that over the annual cycle, the sinuosity is largest in the summertime and smallest in the winter. And this is the spread that you get over those various contours in the upper level flow. Okay, so finally I'm wrapping up with this last new approach that we're taking, and that is using this tool called self-organizing maps, which is basically a clustering technique to look at how the dominant patterns that are in the atmosphere. And we're doing it in a very different way. Some of you who have looked at self-organizing maps in the past are probably used to looking at an actual map of a region, but instead we're taking, again, a particular contour of the 500 millibar height, the daily 500 millibar height fields from the NSEP reanalysis, and separating those contours into their characteristic patterns throughout the year. So we get this, what's called the master SOM. And each of these patterns is has had the daily mean subtracted from it, so it removes the seasonal cycle of northward and southward movement of this contour over time. And so what we get are these various patterns where we've got, wrong button again. We've got longitude on the x-axis here going from 0 to 360 and E for each of these maps. And on the vertical is the latitude difference from its daily mean. So we've got 66 years of daily 500 millibar contours that go into creating these maps. So think of each of one of these being a cluster of days that have their contour most similar to those particular patterns. And we keep track of which days go into each of those maps. So then what we can do is figure out, okay, what's the distribution with month, and that's what's shown here. So on the bottom goes from 1 to 12, so summer would be in the middle, and we have frequency on the vertical axis here. So what pops out is that certain patterns tend to occur in the wintertime, certain patterns tend to occur in the summertime, and others tend to occur in the spring and fall. And once we have that kind of information, we can start looking at other things as well, like the frequency of occurrence of these particular patterns. And that's what's being shown here, where we see around the edges of the psalm, those patterns tend to occur more frequently than the ones in the middle. We can look at things like the mean amplitude of the waves in each of these clusters, and that's what's being shown here. So these patterns along the left here have the highest mean amplitude for all of the days that fall into each of those patterns, but we also see that these winter patterns and seasonal pattern and transition season patterns also on the right-hand side tend to have the highest amplitudes. So that allows us to do some other interesting things, like looking at the change in the frequency of these various patterns. So the ones on top there are the ones I just showed you, but now on the bottom here, we're looking at the difference between these two periods. So earlier in the period, subtracted from the later part of the record. And so what we're seeing here is the change in the frequency of occurrence of these various patterns. And what we're finding is that if you compare it to the amplitude of the mean amplitude of the clusters, that the changes in the frequency tend to be in the patterns that have larger amplitudes. And we can also look at the change in the mean amplitude for each pattern. And what we find there is that the winter patterns, remember they are in the upper right corner, are increasing. And the ones in the bottom left corner, which were mostly summer, tend to be decreasing. So this is all preliminary work, but it's giving you a sense for the kinds of approaches that we're working on these days. So just to wrap up real quick here, I think we can say from some of the recent papers that have come out that have all taken a look at this response of the atmosphere to the ice loss in the Barents Kara Sea with relation to the cold winters that have been happening in Eurasia, this seems to be a pretty robust mechanism. We've got some new tools to work with. The MCI index is telling us that there is a direct link between Arctic amplification and a more meridional flow to the upper level, to the 500 millibar height at least. We see these high amplitude patterns increasing in seasons and regions where Arctic amplification tends to be the strongest. Sinuosity is telling us that there's a robust connection between the Arctic Oscillation Index and sinuosity. And we know that the Arctic Oscillation Index has been generally going down. It's been becoming more negative lately. This is consistent with Arctic amplification in general, and we're seeing also consistent with that an increase in the sinuosity or the waviness of the upper level flow. And finally, just from the self-organizing map analysis, we see that the higher amplitude patterns seem to be happening more frequently. The winter amplitudes in particular are increasing, and the summer amplitude patterns are decreasing in amplitude. So thanks very much.